Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome inside our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. Happy to be with you on this Tuesday, August 4th. And we got a lot going on right now. There's some hockey going on. There's basketball going on. But there's also, in case there's any English soccer fans listening, which there might not be a whole lot of you, but if there are, this one's for you because if you watch English soccer or familiar with the system, you know of the promotion and relegation. We know that Leeds United, a team in the northern part of England, and also West Bromwich Albion, who is a team that is located in a section of England called the West Midlands, automatically got their promotion to the Premier League. But the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth seeds there in the second tier get to participate in a playoff to see who gets that third and final Premier League promotion spot. And Brentford and Fulham, two clubs that are in the west of London, are playing out that championship final, I should say promotion final. And through the first 90 minutes, no scoring, pretty defensive, pretty solid back four for both teams, although everyone's getting chances. But in the first, close to the end of the first 15 minutes of extra time there in Wembley Stadium, Fulham does get the breakthroughs. They are currently into the second half of extra time, a few minutes into that second half of extra time, with Fulham still up 1-0. So I'll keep you up to date on that game as they reach their conclusion. But coming up, we'll talk about some NBA. We'll talk about some NHL as well later on in the show. Also, some news out of the XFL, which is nice to say. Because you know what? The XFL, I think, did a great job of bringing a whole new feel to football. And, of course, the pandemic cut their return short, but they may just be in position to have a season next year. So we'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the show. But let's start with the NFL first, because the news is that players have an opt-out deadline now that is set for this Thursday. That is August 6th. So the NFL informed the NFLPA of that opt-out deadline for players. And that came after lawyers from both sides finally agreed on the formal language of the deal. And while August 6th is later than the original scheduled date of August 3rd, the initial deal, or I think the deal coming from the July 24th agreement, was that players would have a seven-day period after essentially the formal language was set to then choose if they want to opt in or opt out. But because that process between the teams of lawyers kind of dragged out, both sides agreed to make the opt-out deadline this Thursday. And an interesting thing kind of about the formal language and what now has come of this agreement was that, or I guess two big changes really come from this, but one that really stuck out was that there is better protection for players during the discipline process for high-risk behavior away from the facility during the season. So, for example, if a player goes to a concert or goes to an indoor gathering that has more than 15 people there, they would be in a position to be disciplined by the league for taking part in high-risk behavior that could spread COVID-19 throughout their team or throughout the league. So, for players that may be going through that process, they will now have an arbitrator there who will be brought in to conduct the discipline process. And that same action will be taken for a coach or front office employee that goes through or does something like that as well. And I really just, I understand it, but I don't understand it. Because you obviously don't want to try to you know, lock these guys up and say that during the season you can't go out and, you know, fish if you want to fish or do whatever you might want to do throughout the season. But you also don't set a hard line for players to follow. And I think that's where they could get into some trouble. Because if you don't set that hard line of, hey, if you do this, if you, you know, take part in this kind of activity, or if you go to some place that has more than 15 people, and if you don't set a hard line for those type of circumstances, then you're going to have guys that push the limit as far as they can push it. And that's when you get into, you know, well, this guy did this, and you know, I'm getting punished more, and I didn't do as much as this guy did, and you can just get into some ugly back and forth. So while I appreciate the NFL trying to make sure that players don't feel Like, they don't have an outlet. They don't have anything else to do during the football season. I also think they're putting themselves in a tough position that they could get back, you know, they could get backed into a corner by a player or anybody that's saying, hey, you know what? I don't feel that what I did was high risk. I don't feel that, you know, I put myself and my teammates in danger. So how can you punish me if you know, so-and-so went to a family barbecue of 25 people? And you just start to get into these awkward positions as the NFL. And I just don't know if that was the right way to go. You already are going without a bubble this year. So you're already putting yourselves in more of a dangerous position. Now you're essentially saying, hey, if you guys take part in high-risk behavior, some kind of discipline is coming. It may, you know, and it could be a fine. It could be a suspension or something like that. But if it's also just a slap on the wrist or, hey, you miss a half or you miss a game, I don't know if that's going to be as much of a deterrent. And then if you don't take a hard stance and there does end up being an outbreak, again, it's going to look as though, you know, you just didn't have all of the pieces put together where you needed to have them. And the NFL has had more than enough time watching all of these leagues come back to figure out how to handle it. And again, I just don't know if they've handled this entirely right. Because you want to give players freedom, but how much freedom during the season do you really want to give them to take a risk of having some outbreak like you've had in the Major League Baseball? So that makes me a little worried and a little concerned that they're not going to set a hard line for players to follow. I mean, that would make the situation, you know, you can set limits. Hey, you know, if you're going to go out, you know, go out to a place with less than 15 people. Don't, you know, go to X, Y, and Z places throughout the city. You know, you can still make it so they have options, but they know more of the parameter they're operating in versus, hey, do whatever you're going to do, and if it's high risk, we'll talk about it later. That just doesn't seem like the best way to go if you're the NFL. But nonetheless, that is what they've chosen. We will see what players decide to opt out or opt in this coming Thursday. I mean, 4 p.m. Eastern is the deadline. So by 1 o'clock, before I come on the air this Thursday, we will know the players that have officially opted out and are playing this season. Another change that came into the formal language of this agreement between the NFL and NFLPA was the calculations on revenue. So the union wanted the salary cap reduction to take place over the entire life of the new CBA, which runs through 2030. The managers, however, just wanted to kind of eat the loss in 2020 and 2021. But this, I feel like a good agreement was reached. Because you have the cap that's now set for 2021 will be no higher than $175 million per team. And then further losses will be made up from 2022 throughout 2024. So you don't have to kind of deal with this throughout the entire life of the CBA. Instead, you take the first half of that, really, have your issues, work your way through them, and then the second half of that CBA, hopefully we can kind of return to normal operations and teams can go about their business. So I think that was a smart way to go for the NFL. Again, that's an issue that seemed not simple to solve, but it just seemed as though it you know, was a little more straightforward. So I think it was a good move by both sides. And hopefully, you know, like I said, as they get into the second half of the CBA, they can, you know, see business return to a little more of normality and be able to operate as they've been operating. But I think that's a good agreement by both sides, and hopefully they'll be able to just work their way through that and not have, you know, to eat too much of a loss, even though obviously they're going to lose something. But again, this I think kind of helps set them up for that second half of the CBA to bounce back and be in a good position. And like I said, there are players that are opting out. We've had some more players opt out today. Not that, you know, there's been any major announcement today, but we have had 8 more players today announced they aren't going to be playing. And again, not that a lot of these were players that were earmarked roles. I mean, the Raiders had two guys opt out today, but neither of which were really expected to be part of the Raiders or be key figures to the Raiders this year, that being DJ Killings at defensive back and Jeremiah Vilaga at defensive end. So you were starting to see more players like that. And, you know, some are high risk. Christian Miller, outside linebacker for the Carolina Panthers, opted out, but he is believed to be at high risk. So we're seeing, obviously, it makes sense for those guys to opt out. But we're going to figure out what the caliber of talent is like when we get to Thursday afternoon. Because we've seen how, you know, some major players opting out and not choosing to be involved, one of which a few days ago, C.J. Mosley said he wasn't going to play for the New York Jets. And that's a big piece of their defense there, especially to that linebacker core. So we're seeing some names like that, and it just leaves the question of if we do have an NFL season, will we be able to even watch it? Will the quality of these games even be watchable if you don't have stars like that out on the field for these teams? And some will be hit harder than others, but you just have to wonder if, you know, we're going to see 32 teams that could really compete this year, or are we going to see 12 teams that can actually step up and be championship caliber? Not every team in a full season will be able to do that, but I don't think that there's going to be as much of an opportunity for a Cinderella type of run if you have a lot of these teams, you know, losing a lot of star players. And you already had teams like New England that were in a position where they were going to be on a bounce back year anyway. I mean, at least on the offensive side of things, having to adjust now without Tom Brady there. But they've lost a lot of important pieces to that team, both off, I mean, defensively, it seems most more, you know, with, you know, Patrick Chung and Dante Hightower taking this, they're opting not to play this year. But they also had Marquise Lee, a wide receiver, you know, for New England that said he wasn't going to play this season. So that's another offensive weapon that is gone for New England, another weapon that's gone for New England. And so you just wonder what we're really going to see this season, and teams that maybe can coerce their players into buying into the safety regulations and come back. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to change their mind. If a player's opted out, it's not like they're going to get pulled back in the next 2 days or so and think, oh, yeah, it's safe now. No, I think players that have opted out, and that's it. But you just have to wonder if some of these teams that have kept their players' confidence up and have backed them and you know, had some kind of different conversations are going to benefit way more just by having not only their star players there, but that confidence there. But you have a team, I hate to keep using New England as an example, but if you team like New England that has so many players that have opted out already this season, the morale is already low enough, then the confidence is low just because, you know, there's questions about whether it's the IDER plan or whatever it might be, then that could put you in an even worse situation for this season. So I think this Thursday, when we find out who's opting in and who's opting out, it's going to really open up what the quality of this football season is going to be like. And then we still have to wait and see if we even get there. We're still over a month away from kickoff. September 10th, that Thursday night between the Chiefs and Texans, is still the goal, but we're over a month out, and who knows what can happen in that month. Nothing huge has been reported yet in terms of outbreaks, or guys are even being taken off the COVID-19 list. What, Gardner Minshew, I believe, was taken off the COVID-19 list. Matthew Stafford, it was announced today, was taken off the COVID-19 list after he was put on the list due to a false negative. So there's a lot of moving pieces still, and I don't think until we find out who's opting in and who's opting out, we really know what this season and what the quality of this season is going to look like. So that's a big decision today to make that opt-out deadline this Thursday. And we'll have to wait and see what the final kind of feeling is from these players. But nonetheless, it's an interesting situation for the NFL to be in with the opt-out this Thursday and with the fact that essentially they're giving players a little more freedom to partake in high-risk behavior this year. Until we see what a punishment is, it's all just up in the air. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out and who opts in and who opts out come Thursday. But we're going to take a break when we come back. The NBA in full action. And we'll talk about some of the games yesterday and the results that has happened already today, coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the question's been answered, and Fulham are the third and final team to join the Premier League next season as they beat Brentford 2-1 in extra time. I always think it's entertaining when late in a soccer game, the team that's trailing, whether it's by two goals, three goals, whatever, but they score and they rush the net to try to get the ball to rush it back to midfield so they can restart play again. And then you have this jostling over the ball. You know, Fulham has a 2-0 lead. Brentford gets one back very late in stoppage time there in the second half of extra time. Then you have two Brentford players and the Fulham goalkeeper essentially, you know, not fighting each other, but, you know, shoving, holding onto each other, grabbing each other, trying to slow everything up. And then all of a sudden you have that high fluctuation of emotion. The whistle goes, everyone's hugging and shaking hands. It's a very interesting scene. I always find it a little comical. But nonetheless, we know now that Fulham, West Bromwich Albion, and Leeds United are the three teams that will be joining the Premier League for the start of this 2020-2021 season. So congratulations to the team there from West London. Well, someone from West London was going to the Premier League, and it happens to be Fulham. So congratulations to them. Best of luck in the Premier League. They are back into the Premier League. So best of luck to them for the start of this season. But let's talk a little bit about the NBA, because there was already a pretty big result that happened today in the Eastern Conference. The Brooklyn Nets, currently that eighth seed, trying to hold off the charge from Washington there in the ninth seed, had a big win over the Milwaukee Bucks today. Brooklyn beat Milwaukee 119-116. It was a great performance there from Brooklyn. They got out. They had a great first quarter, a 40-point first quarter, and really just held their own from that point on with the Milwaukee Bucks. You had Carborough there for Brooklyn leading the way with 26 points. He was 8 from 12 from the field. Giannis Antetokounmpo himself had 16 points. But, you know, for the most part, this is a great, great performance by Brooklyn. I mean, again, you talk about Timothy Cabarrot, who had back-to-back three-pointers there to put Brooklyn ahead and ahead to stay in front of Milwaukee and keep things interesting there and really keep the pressure on Washington. The Wizards, you know, are the only reason they're still alive in the playoffs is because you have that opportunity of being within four games of the eighth seed as the ninth seed and forcing that, sudden death playoff type of series between the two. Because Washington, had that not be the case, would be eliminated. Because each team has five games left and Washington is eight games back of Brooklyn as of right now. So essentially, if you're Washington, you have to win out and hope that Brooklyn loses at least five or maybe six of or four, three or four of their last five games so that you can close that gap to within four. Otherwise, I mean, if Washington loses another game, they're pretty much done. And they, again, have just struggled. They had that game against the Pacers yesterday where, I mean, TJ Warren again just goes off. And with all the questions around Victor Oladipo right now, TJ Warren is stepping in saying, "Don't worry, I can play ball." And the man again just, he scores 34 points in that game to lead Indiana to a 111-100 victory over Washington. And he had that franchise record performance as well, or one of the better franchise record performances there in Indiana a few games back as well. I think having 50-plus points in that game. I mean, the guy is just unbelievable what he's been able to do for Indiana right now. And, you know, Indiana, that there was a lot of questions around if Victor Oladipo isn't there, are they just kind of existing in that bubble until playoffs really start and they get eliminated? But they've held their own. You know, Philadelphia obviously chasing them down also hasn't really gotten their act together, although they had a pretty good win against San Antonio the other day, which I'm sure will give them a little bit of confidence. But still, There are some good things coming from Indiana, even with the questions and you know, curiousness around Victor Oladipo there. So they should be very proud of TJ Warren and what he's able to accomplish and how he's been able to lead this team so far through this restart, as the Pacers have 5 games left against the Magic, Lakers, Heat, Rockets, and Heat again. So it's going to be a tough road for Indiana, but you look at some of the wins. I mean, being able to beat the Sixers, beat the Wizards, they're off to a good start, you know, so far in this bubble. So Indiana can really kind of start to rely more on TJ Warren and allow him to be that consistent voice throughout this restart, maybe, and into the playoffs as well. Because Indiana's going to the playoffs. They're in that 16-team field. So if TJ Warren continues this, he could really be that guy they continue to turn to and look to as they continue to make their way through this competition. But let's talk about Toronto a little bit, because Toronto got a big win over Miami today. 107-103 is Van Vliet. Scored a career-best 36 points. And if you were watching ESPN yesterday, if you were listening to ESPN Radio yesterday, there was some talk going around about Toronto's win over the Lakers. And it was more so about, you know, should the Lakers be worried? How bad of a loss is that? But really, this is no surprise from Toronto. To see all these, you know, articles or people talking on ESPN or wherever about, oh, can Toronto may actually be able to repeat. Look at Toronto. Look how good they're playing. This has been a team that's been top four in the Eastern Conference all season long. They did not come close to falling off the cliff with Kawhi Leonard gone. And really, it's been that team effort. I mean, this team has weapons all over the place. They have Pascal Siakam. They have Marcus Gasol. They have Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Serge Ibaka. They have tons of guys on this team that can be weapons and can contribute. I mean, Ibaka, VanVleet, Lowry, and Siakam were all in double-digit points in that game against Miami. And that's been the story, I feel like, of this Toronto team. They've waited for that, for the solo star to kind of step out, especially I think for Kyle Lowry. It was always more about DeRozan and then Lowry. It was Kawhi, then Lowry. Now he has a chance to kind of step up and be that team leader. And you got guys like Fred VanVleet who now have kind of taken over that Lowry position when it comes to him with DeRozan or him with Kawhi Leonard. And I think that's really helped just the mentality of that team. To see someone like Kyle Lowry, who has been with that team, watch these stars come and go, he has had the chance now to really step in and be the leader. And Fred VanVleet has stepped right up into that position of, hey, I can be the guy to back you up. And he's done a great job. I mean, 36 points in that game against Miami. If you look at the game they had against the Lakers as well, Fred VanVleet was able to put up 13 points in that one. So he's you know, been a good contributor in these few games with the, you know, within the restart, and he was able to be a spark for that team during the regular season as well. I mean, this is a true team effort from Toronto, and it's mind-boggling now to think that people are just now realizing or just now really coming to grips with the fact that Toronto could repeat. This has been a team that's been able to repeat, like I said, since the start of the season. They have been top four all year long. So they have, with that win over the Lakers, with that win now over Miami, they're skyrocketing in momentum. And with the Bucks losing today and losing 119-116, I mean, Miami's looking like a great – or Toronto's looking like a great team in the Eastern Conference, sitting there in second place, 4 games up still on Boston, only 5 games back of Milwaukee. So if the Bucks have, you know, some kind of collapse, Toronto might be right there by the time we get to the last few games of this, you know, seeding or whatever you want to call it, this restart period to the regular season. So there's a lot to watch there with Toronto and a lot to feel good about if you're the Raptors, not just because of the season you've already had coming into the bubble, but with this restart. They've picked right up where they left off. That team as a whole still looks like they're playing really well together and trust each other a lot right now. And that's what you need. As you come down the stretch into the playoffs, you have to be able to look at your teammates, whether they're on the floor, on the bench, wherever, and have trust in them. If they're called upon, they're put in that situation, they're going to perform. And Toronto right now can feel really good that essentially whoever they put in some kind of position late in the game is going to rise to that occasion. So we'll see what they can do. Their remaining games are Orlando, Boston, Memphis, Milwaukee, Philly, and Denver. So six more games there for Toronto. Their next game will be tomorrow as they take on Orlando. But really good showing from Toronto at the start of this restart in this kind of seeding period of the NBA. And I would say their momentum is just off the charts right now in the Eastern Conference. A team that's not doing well in the Eastern Conference and still not doing well, talked about them a little bit earlier, but essentially, I mean, stick a fork in the Wizards right now. I think they're done. You know, there's still a slim chance they could force that play-in series with them in Brooklyn, but for the most part, I mean, I think Washington's done this season. And that's a bummer. I really felt like they could make a run to challenge Brooklyn, but it just seems like the Nets are in more of a rhythm, so are the Magic, and the Wizards just kind of stumbling through this restart right now. So they still have a mathematical chance of closing in enough to force a play-in, but I think within the next few games, Washington will be officially eliminated from playoff contention, and we can focus on those eight teams there in the playoffs and really watch the battle that's going to be for that seventh seed between Orlando and Brooklyn. They're tied right now. Both of them are 21.5 games back of the leader. So they are even right now between Orlando and Brooklyn. So that, I feel like, is going to be the real battle to watch as they come down the stretch of this season, is who is going to get that seventh seed. Although you might want to take the eighth seed, because if you're the seventh seed, you're most likely going to have to play Toronto. And I think I would almost rather play Milwaukee right now with how they've looked in this restart than play Toronto. I mean, Milwaukee's had to go up against some tough teams so far to start, with games against guys like Houston and Brooklyn and Houston and Brooklyn so far. But they played the Celtics as well there at the end of the July. So they've played the Celtics, they played Houston, they played Brooklyn, so they've played good teams, but they just haven't had that same kind of edge I feel like we've seen in the regular season. Giannis, just while he still is dominant, he still can put his imprint on a game, that team just doesn't seem like they have that same kind of finishing that they normally do. So, I mean, it could be a toss-up, really, who you'd rather play right now in the first round between Milwaukee and Toronto, but I'd almost rather stay away from Toronto there in that first round. But I think that the true battle to watch coming down the stretch is going to be Orlando and Brooklyn there in the Eastern Conference. And another team that's struggling to get some W's when they need them is Memphis. They had a big game against New Orleans last night, and the Grizzlies just fell short, and they've they lost to the Trailblazers in their first game of the restart in overtime, 140-135. Then they lost to the Spurs, 108-106. And they lost to the Pelicans, 109-99. So Memphis has yet to get a win in the bubble and in this restart. And because of that, that race in the West is getting real tight. Just two games now separates Memphis, Portland, and San Antonio. 2.5 games separating Memphis and New Orleans. And then Sacramento and Phoenix are right there at 3.5 games back. So essentially any team that's fighting for that eighth spot in the Western Conference would qualify to force that play-in series right now. So I would essentially bank on the fact that we're going to have an eighth versus ninth place play-in series in the Western Conference. I just don't see any of these teams pulling away and getting more than four games ahead of anybody as we head down the stretch, mostly because they only have about five or six more games to play, and I just don't see them being able to anyone to pull away. So bank on the fact that we're going to have that play-in series. I guess the bigger question will it even include Memphis? Will they even be in a spot to compete? If they could fall to 10th, I mean, if Portland and San Antonio, or even New Orleans, continues to get some wins. I mean, New Orleans, with Zion Williamson playing down the stretch, was a totally different team. And I talked about that a little bit yesterday, but it's just the presence he has on that floor is undeniable, and it just makes a huge difference to the attitude and the momentum that team has coming down the stretch. He said he felt alive again after playing the end of that game. I felt a little bit more alive again watching him and watching that team come down the stretch there in that game against Memphis. And, if you're the Grizzlies, I think it's time to panic a little bit because, you know, you are being led by Ja Morant, who I feel like is doing really the most of what he can do for that team. I mean, he's had to be a star all year long, although he wasn't the leading scorer of Memphis in last night's game against New Orleans. I feel like they've asked a lot of him this season, and now it's time for him to, I mean, he has to have more than 11 points. That's just a bottom line. If he's going to be the star for that team moving forward, he has to have more than 11 points. But nonetheless, it's time for that team to step up, and you got to have those guys around him do more. I mean, in that game against New Orleans last night, you did have a different leading scorer in Jaren Jackson Jr., so nice to see him with a 22-point outing. You also had Dylan Brooks with 15 points there as a starter. You had two guys off the bench there in double digits with Grayson Allen and Brandon Clark. So there is people playing around Memphis, but you have to have that support play, and then you have to have your star score more than 11 points. So for Memphis, it's just been about trying to, you know, get that chemistry back where it needs to be as they are struggling through this restart. But they really can't lose another game if they want to be a threat there in the West, because if you lose too much, you could fall out of that 8th seed. If you fall out of that 9th seed, that would be a horrible collapse for Memphis in this restart. So I think they have to start winning now. I mean, they really can't afford another loss. They have 5 games left against the Jazz, Thunder, Raptors, Celtics, and Bucks. So essentially, your next 2 games are probably going to be the better chances for a win. Because, I mean, the Jazz and Thunder, take nothing away from them, but Raptors, Celtics, and Bucks, those are going to be 3 very tough games coming down to finish your season off. So if they can't get 1 win out of the Jazz or Thunder, or really, if they can't win both of those games, Memphis, I don't know if they'll even be in that play-in game. Because if you continue to look at the schedules that some of these other teams have, I mean, Portland coming down the stretch, the Rockets will be tough, the Nuggets will be tough, the Clippers will be tough, but then the 76ers, Mavs, and Nets coming down the stretch. The Mavs could be a challenge, but I think they'll handle their own against the 76ers and against the Nets. So if you're Memphis, it's time to kind of step up and figure out, you know, how to be that better team. Get Ja Morant a little more involved. Get that team around him, you know, continuing to contribute, but not so much that you're overshadowing the man that's going to lead you to victories in this tournament. So Memphis going to have to get it together, and we'll see if they can. They have a tough stretch coming up, but if they don't, be prepared for Memphis to fall out of that qualification spot or that 8-9 playoff spot in the Western Conference. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, some NHL games to talk about as well. So we'll do that and give you an update on where the playoffs or where the qualifying series stand there in the NHL. Come up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, to give you an update as well here, I meant to do that before I went to break, but I'll give you an update on the NBA scoreboard right now. You have 1 game currently going on in the world of the NBA, and it's those Phoenix Suns again. I'm telling you, the Suns came to Orlando ready to play and ready to try to make a run at that 8-9 play-in series there for the Western Conference. As Phoenix currently playing the LA Clippers, they are under 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. And Paul George is at the line, but Phoenix holding on to a slim 1-point lead right now, 82-79. So that's the only game going on at the moment. Told you about the Nets beating the Bucks. The Dallas Mavericks also beat the Sacramento Kings today in overtime, 114-110. The Magic and the Pacers play at 3. Celtics and Heat play at 3:30. And the Rockets and Trailblazers we'll finish the day off today playing at 6 o'clock. But now let's make our way over to the NHL as the National Hockey League playoffs are underway. They are in that qualifying round of the Stanley Cup Finals, or the Stanley Cup playoffs there. We have had 2 games go final already today. The New York Islanders beat the Florida Panthers 4-2 in that game too. So the Islanders now have a 2-0 series lead. They're one win away from advancing to the official first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs there. And a big game coming from the Islanders. I have his name right down here. Jordan Eberle. He had a great game. 2 goals for the Islanders. 2 late goals there for the Islanders after tying it up in the second period. 2-2. Eberle had the goal at 16:27 to go up 3-2. And then the finishing off power play goal there about halfway through the third period to make it 4-2 for the Islanders. So they have taken full control of that series. It's kind of been nice to have that best 3 out of 5 series for this qualifier because it really puts a whole lot more pressure on, you know, going down 2-0 or, you know, being able to tie the series up 1-1. And for the Islanders to do that, to take a 2-0 lead in that series, that is a strong position for the Islanders to be in. The other game going down today, another series getting equaled at 1 game apiece as the Nashville Predators beat the Arizona Coyotes 4-2 after, pretty much Nashville taking over there in the first almost 2.5 periods of this game. Nashville came out strong there in the first period, getting 2 goals up on Arizona. Got a third goal just about 3/4 of the way through the second period. Then got a power play goal just with about 6 or so minutes left there in the third period to go up 4-0. And there was a little bit of a fight there from Arizona, who got 2 goals in a span of about 9 seconds there, 9-10 seconds. At the end in that final minute to make it 4-2, but just not enough as the Nashville Predators were able to hold on to make it 1-1 as Ryan Johansson had a goal and an assist. And Juicy Saros stopped 24 shots for Nashville as they beat Coyote 4-2 there. So a strong performance. And that goalie spot for Nashville has been talked about. Obviously, Pecorine and Jesse Saros have been duking it out for that starting goalie position for Nashville this year. Pecorine not having as good of a season. And there you have it, a goalie switch, and Nashville walks away with the victory there, 4-2 in Game 2. We have one game currently going on in the world of the NHL. That is the Blue Jackets and Maple Leafs. Again, Columbus getting that kind of upper hand, as many teams did on Canadian teams there in the first game. But Toronto having a 1-0 lead as they are also in that second intermission. Those are the games going on right now. We have 3 more games dropping the puck later today. The Flames and Jets right back on the ice, as are the Hurricanes and Rangers. Both of those series having games yesterday. The Jets coming back, without Scheifele, without Patrick Laine as well, and getting the big 3-2 victory over Calgary to tie up that series 1-1. And the Hurricanes, just like the New York Islanders, taking a commanding 2-0 series lead in that qualifying series, as Andrei Svechnikov scored 3 times for the Carolina Hurricanes, getting that franchise their first hat trick in the postseason in that 4-1 win yesterday. So if Carolina can continue that role, they'll be waltzing their way into the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And Carolina has done a fantastic job of, again, just, you know, being a gritty team. I feel like that grittiness is really what helped carry them through that Eastern Conference playoffs last year. They had a good forecheck going on, and much kind of like we saw in the Vegas-Dallas game, Carolina kind of caught New York being a little over-aggressive, kind of not napping so much, but just kind of caught them out of position. And with the way Carolina can be on that break and in transition, you don't want to be those kind of teams. And that's what ended up biting Dallas today in that game against Vegas. Vegas once or twice kind of caught the Stars being a little over-aggressive, trying to inch a little bit closer, you know, to that Vegas zone, were able to get them in transition. And Vegas had a great comeback yesterday. They had the first period goal to go up 1-0 just a little over a minute into the game. Another quick goal that we've seen here in this restart. But then Dallas just came out and flexed their muscle in the second period, getting 3 goals from 3 different players to take a 3-1 lead. And then Vegas themselves, 4 goals from 4 different players in the second or in the third period to take a 5-3 win. So a very back and forth game between those two, like you would expect from teams in the top four that are battling out for seeding. And that now puts Vegas and Colorado with 2 points, whereas St. Louis and Dallas, or I believe St. Louis has 1 point there because of their shootout loss or their overtime loss to the Blues. No, I'm sorry. I'm getting my series mixed up here. That was the buzzer beater there between St. Louis and Colorado. But nonetheless, these top four seeding games there in both of these conferences have been very tight. They've been back and forth. That Dallas game in Vegas showed that. St. Louis and Colorado showed that. Even the games in the Eastern Conference have surprised us with Philly's big win over Boston. So these seeding games are proving to be just as unpredictable as these qualifiers, which didn't feel like that heading into it. You know, it felt as though We had the teams that were going to be, you know, the table runners. Teams like Boston that had been dominant for so long this season. Same with St. Louis. They've just been able to really pretty much manage anything that came their way. So to see these top four seeding games be as back and forth and as cutthroat as they are is a very, you know, again, it's a pleasant surprise. Like most of these restarts have been. You know, I expected the play to be down a little bit. I wasn't expecting a lot of teams to come out super physical in this start, but that's really where a lot of these hockey teams have gotten that energy. You don't have that home crowd there. You don't have that energy of the fans coming down onto the arena and pumping you up. So it seemed like a lot of these hockey teams and a lot of these hockey players got their energy up and got their adrenaline flowing by just being as physical as they possibly could in this restart. I think it's made for a lot of exciting play. It's made for a lot of unpredictable play. So excited to see that, and hopefully that continues as we keep going. But nonetheless, you know, Pittsburgh, Edmonton, a lot of teams having some bounce-back performances yesterday with Pittsburgh beating Montreal 3-1 to tie up that series. The Oilers came back and gave the Blackhawks a bit of a taste of their own medicine, beating them 6-3 in that game to tie that series up 1-1. So Canadian teams looking like they're fine. Maybe they felt a little bit of pressure. Maybe that was it. Maybe being in Canada, they felt as though they were going to have to put on a little bit more, and they kind of stumbled their way through that first round of game ones. And now as they settle back into the series, settle back into all these you know, atmospheres without fans and coming up with your own energy and getting yourself in that mindset, maybe they're getting back to that. Because the way Edmonton played against Chicago in that first game was, I mean, I don't want to say shocking, but it definitely caught your eye in you know, kind of a, depending on what team you root for, a good way or a bad way. But to see Edmonton kind of get manhandled like that by Chicago until the Oilers were able to make a little bit of a run there in the third period. But for the most part, Chicago dominated game one. Edmonton turned right around, dominated game two. So we'll see how game three goes between both those teams. But some good bounce-back performances there in the NHL. And something to be happy about if you're an NHL fan, no new positives reported for the coronavirus from either bubble. So both the bubble in Edmonton and Toronto doing their job. Everyone's following the rules. And it seems as though the NHL is on their way, much like the NBA, to completing their season and crowning a champion, which is what we all want in the world of sports. So that's what's going on in the world of the NHL. Exciting stuff as they continue to continue with their playoff qualifiers today. Like I said, one game in action right now, three more games to drop the puck later, and we'll just keep enjoying the great hockey action on the ice. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, some news from the XFL. We'll talk about that on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the XFL shut its doors once again earlier this year when the coronavirus pandemic shut down the whole world of sports, which was a bummer. I thought the XFL did a great job of putting their own twist on the sport of football and really made it an intriguing product to watch. And while we thought they may be dead and gone, they are, well, They may not be. It's not official yet, but a group including Dwayne The Rock Johnson has agreed to purchase the XFL for about $15 million, according to a news release that was released yesterday. Now, of course, the XFL again declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy, but Johnson and his investors, who include his business partner Danny Garcia, along with Redbird Capital Partners, are making plans to play next season. That would be pretty incredible for the XFL to be on the field next season and playing, seeing as how, you know, they didn't seem like when they shut down, we were going to hear from the XFL ever again. And this shows you, I think, how much of an impact that sport made in its 2.0 format on, you know, fans in just that short a time. With the intriguing new look of the kickoff, with the three different aspects of the extra point, with you know, the insight you got listening to referees and review officials talk while they were reviewing a play. The XFL did a lot of things right. And if Dwayne Johnson and his partners come into this and are able, because they have a meeting on Friday, I believe, with the with a bankruptcy judge, and that you know, he has to approve this before moving forward. But if this does go through, and if we do have the XFL possibly lining up on the field next season, I think that would be great for the sport of football. Because nothing against the NFL, obviously they're not going anywhere, but the XFL can truly give fans a strong alternative to the NFL. Especially as that season comes and goes, the XFL can get right into it and give you a totally different look for football that is enjoyable and that makes sense. Not doing cartoonish things just to be cartoonish and try to give you something different. They're giving you a legit product on the field that you can watch and enjoy. So I hope this goes through, and I can't wait to see how The Rock and his partners can conduct business with the XFL. That should be interesting. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be on the air tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and we'll talk then. Peace.